Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today I'm joined by Greg. Greg, how you doing, my man?
Doing great, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've just broken like the golden rule of business that I was always taught just before we hit pause, which is never talk about politics. We just have, but we didn't fall out, mate. We both done something right.
Exactly. No, I think it was great. Everyone in the world right now is interested in what's going on in US politics. If you're not, you're probably not aware of the news.
Yeah, if you're not, you're probably under a rock somewhere. Yeah, because you can't miss it. But yeah, Greg, so thanks for joining. For any of the listeners that don't know you, so Greg Slayton started off back in 2000. You were the president of owner of an IT, Kentucky IT professional services. You then progressed on to be an information tech director in the city of Richmond, Kentucky. You were then at Myers and Stoffer.
Yep.
There is an IT director and an information security officer. You were also a client partner at Galvanize, senior manager even, Cognizant. Currently, you are at 8PointX. You started off as a senior principal consultant and then got promoted and progressed all the way up to director. So welcome to the show, Greg. Did I get your intro okay, mate?
You did. That was great. Yeah.
Cool. Wait, so yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting today, mate. You've held some like heavy hitting big titles there. You're holding one now. It'd be nice to dive into the ins and outs of how that goes down and what it's like and how to progress up to that level as well for various different listeners that are listening. But I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you, my friend? What have you been up to professionally? What's a day like in the life of Greg right now?
Great, thanks. Yeah, so good to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. I was pleasantly surprised when you reached out a few months ago. I know we've been trying to get this conversation to happen for a minute, so I appreciate you being patient with me. Things are quite busy as always. I'll talk a little bit about, you covered my past. I started, really around 2000, I'd started my own company doing IT support, right? The general IT type of things, network support for a local ISP. That type of work. I'd spent a couple of years at that point doing IT support and getting my feet wet and all those different types of topics. I ran my own organization for about 7 years doing lots of consulting. It ended up leading into an opportunity where I was doing so much work for a county that I lived in and the city government that I worked for that they just wanted to bring me on as a full-time employee and kind of run their operations. And I did that for 4 or 5 years. And each of the roles that I've had, that role specifically gave me a lot of experience, things like being involved with the 911 centers and technologies behind that and technologies behind police and firemen and their vehicles and how do you help manage that and track it. And then city locations gave me lots of different styles of leaders to work with and working with the public a bit. And I progressed into some different roles from there. Again, each one of them with a little bit more criteria, a little bit more stringent work that we were doing and taking lots of self-taught courses along the way, lots of reading. Went through the certified ethical hacker training back in 2006 or 2007, somewhere around in there. Right when it first came out, I didn't know the certification at that point would really mean something. So I took the training and didn't get the certification, went through all of that. Yeah. So I had that experience, right, way back early and started learning about what was going on in the world with technology and what risk really began to look like. And it started to form some of the opinions and shapes that I had. I had opportunities to set in being part of a city and FBI meetings and it's things I'd never been a part of before. I got invited to some things like that to understand what was going on in the world and opened my eyes to risk and how the world was seeing risk and how people with bigger programs and organizations were approaching these types of things. If you remember back in the middle, maybe 2008 or so, the big thing was Russia was involved with trying to steal people's bank account information and people were stealing things out of mailboxes. It's a totally different approach than what exists today, right? With everyone being online. Everyone wasn't online at that time. So I lived through all of that. Lots of cool technologies and point-to-point wireless and everything that was going on big back then, I had an opportunity and was blessed to be a part of. Moved into a role at Myers and Stauffer where things really began to change. I joined the organization when there were about 250 people. I was there for 9 years, had incredible mentors, and we'll probably talk about that at some point. Really upped my game from the business perspective, how an organization really runs, how do acquisitions happen. I was involved in an acquisition where the company doubled in size. When I started, they were probably 250 people and $30 million. And by the time I left, they were over about 1,100 people and $400 million. And it was just a total different game, total different type of responsibilities that we all had. led a large technology team of about 60 people, and included software development and data analytics and things that I hadn't been exposed to before. And it was just great. And so I've had incredible opportunities that have come. Once I finished my stint at Myers and Stauffer, I took an opportunity to take some of the things I'd learned for 20 years and move into a consulting role. And how do I help organizations? I love the idea of teaching. I love the mentor piece. I love being mentored and being a mentor. And so I took the opportunity to go into consulting to start to help organizations. How do you manage these programs? What does risk really look like? And we can get into some of the things that I think are that maybe at some point, what do I see being the challenges for people who get into cyber today and the different style works and how you can be successful and what do you need to be focusing on to improve your career if you want to be a value add to the organization that you're on, or if you want to get into an organization and be a value add, what are the things that really impact that journey? And I've taken the opportunity. I love ACA Aponics. That's where I'm at today. I work with probably the brightest team that I've been exposed to in my career from a risk perspective today. They're all self-starters. I call them all unicorns at times, the individuals that I work with on my team and that I'm surrounded with. And so I've been blessed. And you went through this career track for me, but I've been really blessed and I have a great opportunity. I take advantage of it. I work with lots of types of organizations today. My role specifically today, I work with private equity firms. I help their portfolio companies and the private equity sponsors understand the risk of doing business in a 2024, right? And whatever that entails, and it covers lots of regular cyber domains and business domains and third-party risk management, you name it, I'm involved in it and helping organizations understand how to protect their investments.
Wicked. Thank you. Do you know what, mate? So many people, but that's such a good way you've broke that down, so thanks. But so many people like will want to know. They'll look at where you are now and go, how do I get to director? How do I do it? But it's, you've almost, listening to you there, it's like, support started out, made effort, got off your own back and actually taught yourself various different positions you've had, learned how to articulate risk. You've gone through the life cycle of when stuff was a more of a physical threat as opposed to a virtual threat. You've talked about mentors. You've then gone on to talk about mergers, acquisitions, transactions, finance. You mentioned about private equity and you mentioned managing a team of 60 and then the mentor piece and then you mentoring people. Then it's like answers the questions to a certain extent for the listeners. Like, how do you do it? Well, you've just basically taken all these experiences and you've been getting paid to do that along the way, but also it's been like a real continuous like learning journey experience, which is all just encompassing to where you are today. It's really nice to hear you break it down. It sounds like it's been quite good fun as well, mate.
It is. It's been great. And I've enjoyed the ride. I still enjoy it. I tell my wife, I don't know that I'll do this forever. I'll just break the silence on this. I'm 51. I'll soon be 52 in a month. So I'm not the youngest person that'll be listening to this podcast for sure. But I told my wife, hey, I probably won't do this forever, but she would tell you the opposite. I'll probably never stop. And she said, you'll be 70 doing this, right? You'll be 75 doing this. And I really do love it. I really do think that we can impact organizations and turn IT, I'll use some business language, turn IT from being a cost center to helping to increase the revenue opportunities for the organization because we reduce the risk, right? And we prevent bad things from happening. And we help organizations implement technologies and solutions that can drive the business forward, whether it's through organic growth, if that's your model, or whether it's through acquisition, right? We can empower the organization to do great things if we allow ourselves to do that. And if we really look at it in that way.
Craig, that's definitely something to touch upon. I wasn't going to go there yet, but you know what, maybe we will. I'd like to talk about the foundational stuff and more about how you've got to where you've got sure. to and that growth journey. And definitely, I know you mentioned mentors and stuff like that, so we'll definitely get into that. But what you just said there, which is essentially articulating risk to your clients in a way that stops you from being a cost center and you're seen as there's some ROI there and it's like a really good investment. That is a hell of a set. And I always say anyone that can master that or get anywhere near technical knowledge as well becomes very dangerous in a good way. They're probably going to have lots of career progression, lots of success, lots of fun. If I'm listening now and I'm thinking, that sounds mega, really know where to start. Like, how do I do that? How do I explain that? How do I get better? Like, any tips, hints, or anything at all for the listeners in how to enhance that particular skill set that we've both just talked about?
Sure, I think it's understanding. It's a challenge, and I couldn't always do it. I mentioned my time at Myers and Stauffer, and I could name individuals. There were a couple individuals there. One of my direct person that I was responsible working for many years, his name was Keenan, had an incredible aptitude for taking very complex things. He had been in the organization. He's since retired, but he was in the organization for 40 years. Started out of college, but had an amazing aptitude for taking difficult things and explaining them in a way that made sense. I'll take it to the simplest things, right? So I would be having conversations and I would be talking about he said this and she said that and they said this and they were going to do this. And we're in this large organization and many complex things. And he started saying, who's he? Who's they? Who's she? And it started getting me to understand that I wasn't being clear in the way that I was speaking. And it seems like such a simple thing, but I learned to articulate the topics that I was talking about in a very short, very concise method. They taught something in this in the accounting world. Myers and Stauffer, largest government healthcare accounting firm in the nation, right? Very, most people don't know who they are. They do things like audit Medicaid for every state, right? For all 50 states, and involved in gigantic things for government healthcare programs. And Keenan taught this mantra of see one, do one, teach one, right? And you would watch someone do something. You would do it yourself, then you would teach others how to do it. The second piece was that nothing goes out without self-review, peer review, and senior review. And so I'd never used those concepts in IT before, and I'd never had anyone talk to me about those kind of concepts. And what I started doing with our team was, hey, if we're going to send something out, you should review, do a bit of self-review on emails that you send out to your internal business stakeholders or whoever you're communicating with. If it's something that has that's going to have value to it or some consequence with it, you should have a peer review it. Make sure it seems good. You should have a senior review it, right? Very simple things that live in other areas of business that IT generally isn't implementing themselves. And so I started taking some of those things, wordsmithing. How do we make things emails that today people can use things like Grammarly or Copilot or ChatGPT to improve the way that they speak? But back then, those things weren't available, and you had to really put some thought into how do I self-review, peer review, and senior review things that I'm putting out. So that the idea is that the things that we do, they need to show value and they need to be excellent, right? And so that's the first piece. How do you learn how to communicate? How do you learn how to speak the business language? You should get a mentor that can help you with technology for sure, but you should also be looking for mentors who can help you understand how to articulate things in the way that business owners and leaders are going to digest it, right? If you go to an IT business leader and you're over technical with them, you're going to lose them in the first few minutes. If you can't translate the technical things that you're discussing into real business risk and real business concepts, you're going to lose them. And what they're going to hear you say is, hey, I need to spend X number of dollars on this technology solution because it's nice and it's pretty and it's going to do the following 17 things for me that they'll never remember two of. Or you could come to the individual and you could say, we have an issue. We have a continuity problem in the organization that if we don't address this risk, here's how it's going to affect us quantitatively or qualitatively as an organization. We're going to look at this risk. It's a key process and it's a key revenue generating area for the organization. If we were to lose this functionality of this organization, it's going to cost us X. And so at that point, we're then not spending money on an IT project. We're talking about how do we reduce risk for the business, and the cost of that may not be as important as it was before.
So you're giving real live quantifiable answers there. I love the way you just tied it to take all the words out, tie it to revenue, bang, and explain
Right.
it, and explain how it's actually going to affect them in the real life scenario. But yeah, thanks. So on the communication piece for everyone listening, concise, Kenner, the chap that mentored you in terms of getting your communication skills where they are today, he really got you to simplify problems. You peer reviewed everything, you self-reviewed your own emails, really took time to wordsmith your emails out and get them going, and just generally just got used to actually communicating to non-security people, non-technical people, and found out the ins and outs of how they wanted to be, how they wanted to talk.
I'll say one other thing that might help individuals get in a relation, those style of relationships. So if you're in an organization, say it's a small, mid-sized company, today you're the IT director, you're on the IT staff, or maybe let's just stick with IT directors. Let's say you have a responsibility where you're an IT director in a small, mid-sized company. You're really responsible. It's you and maybe an MSP or someone else who's helping you do some of these things. You don't have a large team. There's two or three of you. You have your hands full. You're a working technical director, right? That's a very common role in the US, especially, and all over the world from the companies that I work with today. One of the first things I suggest is, do you have an IT security committee? Have you put together a group? of yourself and business leaders where that can help you to get things across the line. Because the business leaders, if you engage with the right individuals in your organization, maybe it's not the CEO, maybe it is. Maybe it's some other C-levels within your organizations or VPs within your organization who are business owners. If you can get buy-in from those people, make them understand the security, you guys become a team. And everything IT we're implementing isn't now Rich Thomas is trying to make us do all these things and all the employees are mad at Thomas. No, we have an information security committee who has met and the business has decided we're going to do the following. And these are decisions of the business and it has the backing of the leadership of the business. And so in that, the IT individual can learn how the business operates and what their desires are through their regular cadence of meetings. And the business can learn what the IT is really doing and can begin to articulate risk themselves. We did that at Myers & Stauffer, probably the best decision ever. We put together this small group who worked together for 10 years while I was there. And it was probably the best thing that could have ever happened. Taught me lots of things about business and they learned lots of things about risk. And at the end, we were all talking the same thing so that when I left, it wasn't a giant challenge for them to continue moving forward in the right direction, right? Cool. If you don't have that today, I think that's something you should do. You should figure out how to, don't make these decisions on your own. They're difficult decisions. They're difficult decisions anyway. Don't try to tackle some of these and implement things and implement change everywhere.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. That makes complete logical sense. It's just removing like this them and us culture. It's like when you hear security people sometimes talk bad mouthing devs and stuff like that. And it's like, well, we don't want this divide between security and non-security or technical and non-technical. It's like just bringing everyone together. People like that feeling of belonging and on a team. I can see over time why it helped.
It does. And it sets you up for success, right? Because the business at the end of the day, it's all about revenue. They want to be successful. They want to grow. Again, whether it's through organic, whether it's through acquisition, however their whatever their thesis is for that. Today in the organizations I work with, the private equity companies, they have the portfolio companies and private equity firms. They have a thesis. They're trying to grow. They're trying to improve their position in the market. And so these things empower you to accelerate all of that. If you try to do these individually, you're going to not make the progress that you could as a team, right? Again, you're missing business context. If you don't know the business context, you're not going to be able to spend the money you need to make your programs move forward. It's just not, it's too large of a hill to climb in a shorter period of time.
Yeah, cool, Greg. Thanks, mate. Like before, so I think a lot of people listening will maybe know they need to enhance these skills. They maybe know they need to be a bit more clear, a bit concise. And now, Greg, for you, it probably seems quite easy because you're doing it all the time and you've refined it over a long period of time. Back in the day, like, for example, when you were saying he said and she said and Kenna was looking at you going, what are you doing? Like back in the day before you're on the way to refining these skills, you haven't got it yet. You're not right. Where you are today. How do you get through that? Like, how do you get through those awkward moments? How do you get through getting it wrong? When you're doubting yourself, have you got any go-to tips or advice for pushing forward and actually getting where you want to get to?
Yeah, I was known for a long time for walking around with a pen and a small legal pad in my hand all the time. And I took notes on everything, right? Today you have apps that can listen to you and take notes for you and all of those things. And I guess I was pre-technology on all of that. I was writing things down. I was meeting with the right people. I was taking the extra step and asking you, can you explain this? And I was not just playing the village idiot at times. I was the village idiot, right? I was truly didn't understand some concepts and topics. And so I would ask questions until I thought that I could figure out what they were talking about and how we were trying to get there. And what do these complex business narratives really mean? You have to be unabashedly not ashamed to do that. If you want to progress, you have to ask questions. You have to study on the side. I was known for years, and we haven't got into this. My wife and I have been married. I've been married for, it'll be 27 years in a month. And we have a disabled child, and so he's our only son. He's completely disabled. I'll be married 28 years, and my son will be 27. So that's my age is telling me. But yeah, I used to help my wife with our son, and God bless her. She's a godsend to me. We've lived our whole lives doing all of this, but we would do our regular lives, and then at night, I would get on the internet, and I would start reading, and I would start studying. I would work till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning trying to study and learn these concepts and see what people were doing and how people were being successful at these types of things and reading everything I could get a hold of and reading books. And I haven't talked about certifications. I have a lot of them, going through and getting some certifications, et cetera, trying to just improve the skill set, not only from the technical side, but not being afraid to get my hands dirty. I be a working manager and helping the technology teams to implement and staying close to those types of things. And again, all of that I was doing was trying to understand how do I apply these technologies to the business. Because at the end of the day, if you don't add value to the business, they don't necessarily will recognize you or know that they need you. Anyone can fill your role. But if I'm a business asset, it's hard to get rid of me. It's hard for me to go away. People will be upset. If where's Greg? I want people asking, where's Greg at? I need to ask Greg this question. I wonder what Greg's opinion is, right?
Yeah, Greg, I really like that. There's so much to break down there. And what I was getting at the start, I can just imagine you now walking around this office with your pad, annoying everyone at the time and not caring. And it's like, you use the word village idiot, but it's you just massively drop the ego. You were just walking around like a massive sponge. And I didn't want to be like that guy as I get a bit older that kind of bad mouths younger people, because I think there's a lot of younger people out there that want to progress, want to learn, want to work hard. But listening to you speak there, it's worth reiterating, like, you've obviously got some big commitments there with your son that are still there today. You're then working in the day, you're helping your wife. But then, let's say, when people go to bed, you've then gone and upskilled and got certifications. And I almost think some people are almost scared to talk about the grind and working hard and doing stuff after hours. It's almost like, oh, I've got to be careful. We can't say this, we can't say that. But the reality is, if you want to progress up to the top level security and all the things and benefits and perks that come with that, you've got to make some sacrifices. You've got to push forward and you've got to push yourself pretty hard, mate, haven't you? It sounds like you have done.
You have to. But if you don't want to do that, the world is perfectly satisfied with you not being that person. Mm. And so I always say the only person in my way is the only person preventing me from being successful is me. I didn't come from a long line of people that were successful. They've been amazing people and they've done amazing things in their lives, but no one's ever tried to excel. And I didn't have any leadership in our families, my wife's family, my family, anyone who ever attempted to do some of the things that I'm doing today. And I just said, I'm a guy from the Midwest who I've just decided that I want to go for some things and I'm going for it, right? And so what does it take to do there? We knew early on when our son was born 3 months early, completely disabled. We didn't know that at the time, but he was premature. We were blessed for him to live. He shouldn't have lived a day past the day he was born. And we learned early on when we realized our son had cerebral palsy and that he was going to be disabled for the rest of his life. At some point, my wife wouldn't be able to work and we'd be a one income family. Before I broke into IT, I was working one job and then I would work IT in the evenings and on the weekends. And I've done that. I did that for years. Yeah, I worked a couple of jobs for probably 10 years or more and just knew that my wife wouldn't have an income. And so if we want to be successful, the only thing in my way is me. And how hard do I want it? How hard am I willing to work for it? And, you know, maybe it's a different kind of drive for me. It taught me to be a patient person and to really understand what it means to appreciate what I have and the value of being able to get up and do things. And so I couldn't take for granted when I see my son who's not able to do anything on his own, right? He's in a wheelchair, he's not able to do anything. I don't take for granted. When I think I'm having a bad day, Thomas, it doesn't take me long to realize I'm having a great day. I really actually have, I'm having a great day. It's all perspective, right?
Yeah, mate, you've basically just ultimately tapped into your sense of purpose, and it's the biggest driver there. Some people think it's money, it's not. Some people think it's this, that. But yeah, it sounds to me like you've just massively tapped in for that, got your mind, body really in tune with what's going on with your family and everything like that. And then bang, you're just off to the races and you've just kept that going for a sustained period of time, which is really good. Just back to the notepad thing, and you talked about apps. I actually reckon you were onto something back then when you had your pen and your notepad, because I've been looking at, like, I get quite obsessive, like I've got over here with everything we've got going on. Yeah. And I literally, I'm saying it's like I write everything down. I've been reading that it literally removes it from your head onto the page, declutters your mind. It's meant to reinforce the knowledge better. So a long-winded way of saying, Greg, I reckon you were onto something, mate, back in the day with that pen and note.
That's great. I found that if I could write a concept down and I couldn't write it down well, then maybe I didn't understand it good enough. And so I found that as I learned to write things down and what I was doing and what this meant, right? Hey, this is what they were asking me for. Then I'd read it back and I'd say, hey, look, here's what I heard you say. It's what I thought I heard you say. That's really applied into now I do assessments and short of audits with organizations and doing all of that type of thing. And I'm working and I'll say, I use the phrase all the time. I want to go over what I thought I heard you say. I still do it today. And I say, this is what I thought I heard you say. And I think that skill set of being able to say that back to someone and say, hey, here's what I thought I heard you say is valuable, because if they say you almost got it, then what did I miss? Right. Or no, that's exactly what I said, right? Yep, you've got it. Perfect. And that's all I need to know, because then I can action on what you told me. But if not, then you can provide some clarity to me. I'll take another note. I'll reinforce what I've just heard you do and what you've explained to me, and then we're all better for it. But again, you mentioned the ego word earlier. I haven't really considered that word too much, but yeah, maybe that's it. You got to drop the ego and be, I just want to be value. I know that if I can show people my value and provide value to the organization, then I'm a value add and they're going to want to work with me. The opportunities are never going to stop, right? Mm-hmm. They're just going to keep coming. And so I've not slowed down yet. And I don't have any intention of it for a minute.
Good, mate. No, I could never. Yeah. When you said, mate, at the start, you were like, yeah, I'm going to start chilling out. And whenever it is, a few years, I was like, no, he's not.
I think maybe I'll mention one thing I thought was this, that ended up being a much more value than I thought it would be. Here I was walking around, say 2017. I'd been doing this now for 20 years. And I actually started doing IT stuff around 1992. I mean, it's a long time ago. We started, me and friends of mine, when we heard you could build websites, we started building websites and put a Unix server on the internet. I did that with one of my friends and was privileged to be part of stuff before people were even using AOL. I'm starting to really tell my age, right? Yeah. One of the things that I found, I'm like, people aren't listening to me, and I could get in certain situations and I'm like, I know the answer to this, but people weren't taking me seriously. And then I just made a decision one day. I was looking at, there was a certification I'd heard about a lot, the CISSP. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll get this certification. I didn't put two and two together that when I got the CISSP, all of a sudden people would go, wait a minute, we should probably listen to this guy because he probably understands security. I didn't realize how valuable it would be to me at that point, but it was a real value add, right? Mm-hmm. That when I did that and I found myself on calls with clients and people who understood what that meant, and all of a sudden, the people started listening to the things I was already saying, but now it started to be a little bit more believable. So does it matter if you have education? Does it matter if you have certifications and things like that? I think the certifications probably carry a little bit of weight that they shouldn't carry, but I think it's a necessary part of the journey, right? That you get the CISSP, I've got CISSP, CISM, CDPSE, a bunch of A+, Network+, Security+, name it. I've got a bunch of these things. And I think they all add a little bit of value along the way and reinforce the thought that you as an individual are taking time to have this continuous learning and improvement in your own career. And it provides value, right? And so people start to see that and they go, oh, yeah, maybe we should listen to this guy. Right.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was having a certification conversation yesterday with someone, Greg, and everyone, like whether it's on LinkedIn or X or whatever, everyone likes to pull out the example of someone that got any certifications and they're doing well, and that's great, but ultimately they are worth having. They are an investment. You're never going to look back and regret getting CIS. I don't see the drawback. It's money well spent. And I've been on client calls where, you know, I've got one hiring manager. I actually mentioned this on another pod, but I'll say it again. But I've got one hiring manager telling me they don't matter, and then I've got another one butting in going, yeah, they do. And that's a prime example. You think you've got a situation where a client organization or their clients, if they're working on a consultancy basis or for an MSP, you think they don't matter, but they do, because there's different people involved. Customers like them. Like I say, they give you extra clout in a meeting. They might get you the meeting in the first place. They might just get your foot in the door. You talked about at the minute being surrounded by some really bright superstars and rock stars that are elevating your game. They might just get you in that room that you would have never got in. And then because you're in that room, you get in the next room and the next room before you know it. Yeah. So there's just no downside, mate, to the mister.
Yeah. Let's say you're a small organization, right? Small, mid-sized organization, and you're going to be bidding on RFPs or something like that, right? And if there's a technical component to it, they can put you on the RFP and they can say, hey, I've got this person who has the CISSP, right? They understand that's a standard of this person probably gets very well the technical side of things that need to be implemented from a security perspective. And they have someone who can help drive that. And so even just as simple as that, you could get your name on an RFP just because you have some of these, and you add, again, that's a value add to the organization, right? It's a value add to your career. It's not easy. It's just not an easy certification. Some people say it probably is. That's fine if it was for you. It was challenging for me, even though I had been working in these domains for 20 years. Right. So I think I don't see the downside to it. Other than the amount of CPE I have to maintain today is ridiculous. And I don't have time for CPE necessarily. So I'm one of those people who cram CPN in everywhere I get it, chance.
Yeah. Do you know what it is as well? When I'm listening to you talk, it's almost like there's this pattern emerging of, if you can just do a bit more, and you can relate it to so much in life. Like, you just go and get the certifications. You just go and utilize your mentor to enhance your communication skills. You just go and manage the team of 60. You just go and get some exposure to some private equity firms and talk about various different transactions. And it's the compound effect of this over 20 years is incredibly powerful. Like just one little bit on its own might not just getting us this, but then getting lots of certs, doing all the things I've just mentioned, is all really adding up. Really good fun. And ultimately, it just gets you where you want. Let's see, if you don't want to get there, fine. But if you want to get there, please listen, because it makes a difference.
It makes a big difference. And the world is open. I look for it, right? One of the things that I said this to one of the gentlemen I work with when I first started working with him, he's much younger than me. And man, he's brilliant, right? Everybody on our team's brilliant, but he's brilliant. And one of the first things I said to him is I said, hey, you're great at what you do. I'm here to support you as much as I possibly can. He's on my team. And I said, my hope is that you're much more successful than I ever will be, and at a much earlier age, right? I don't want you to have to, if I can help you to not have to jump through some of the hoops that I jumped through and to get there faster, I want to accelerate your journey to get there, right? Because it's a big enough world that we can all be successful. And there's enough risk everywhere that we can all be successful. We can all be practitioners. We can all move forward. And I'm not intimidated by you being great. It's difficult to be the smartest person in the room. And I don't necessarily want to be, right? I don't have to be. One of the things I learned early on was that I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I just have to be the person that gets it first, right? And if I can really get what they're saying, I don't have to know how to solve it. I just have to understand the business problem. If I can understand the business problem and articulate that well, then I can get the right people and surround myself with the people that'll help us implement to success. But there's this thing that you have to understand and listen. And again, I go back to some of my mentors, and there was a couple of them. I mentioned Keenan. There's a lady named Bev, who was a partner at Myers & Stauffer, who was such an invaluable add to my life and help keeps me grounded and keep me forward and focusing on the business pieces of this, who, again, if I didn't have them, there would have been a lot of the conversations I have today wouldn't be as fruitful.
Yeah, no, definitely. That brings us really nicely on to mentors. And you mentioned like teaching others and stuff like that and being generous with your knowledge. And it's like the rule of the universe, but it is a fact that in you helping others and sharing your knowledge, it is actually helping you at the same time, because you're reinforcing everything. You're keeping it fresh, sharp. You're probably actually, without even realizing, enhancing the way you can explain it, because you want to explain it in a clear and concise manner again for the person you mentor. And so there's benefits to obviously receiving mentorship, but there's benefits to giving it as well. But Keenan, Bev, they sound like that those two were quite instrumental in getting you where you are today, Greg. For people listening out there, so obviously things are more virtual these days. I worry about people at the more junior end being in that remote virtual. And if I haven't got a mentor or I'm struggling to find one, any kind of like hints or advice? How did, was Keegan and Bev, was that just pure luck, right place, right time? Or did you make it happen to a certain extent? How did those relationships form?
They had great mentor relationships already in place in the organization. I got in an organization that was very sound, and they started building these programs, realizing if they wanted experts and they wanted excellence, they grew it themselves, right? They hired the right people and then grew the excellence that they wanted, and taught them how to do that. Again, there was a gentleman named Chris who taught me this. I mentioned see one, do one, teach one, right? That mantra of, if you can see someone do something, and then if you get the opportunity to do it yourself, then you do it a couple of times and you start to teach someone else how to do it. What you were talking around mentoring there. If that's a great mantra. If you can do that, you can do anything, right? You can watch someone do something. You can get an opportunity to do it yourself. And then you can teach people how to do it. It just reinforces that entire journey on you becoming an expert at something. And I think the opportunity came to me because people afforded me the opportunity at some level. They were open to it. And then again, I had to go get it. I had to go look for it. I had to go and be willing to set aside my title, my being an expert, quote unquote, right? To being able to ask the questions that I didn't know the answers to, ask for relationships with people. Hey, can you help me with this? Hey, can I stand up? Could I set up a series of meetings with you where we have a cadence of, can I meet with you biweekly or monthly? Could I have some of your time? Not being afraid. I think I'm one of those types of people, and I've learned over many years in my life that there are a couple different types of people. There are people that run away from fear, and there are people that run headfirst into it, maybe. And I seem to always be the person that if the more I'm afraid, the more I probably just run headfirst into it and make it happen. If I don't want to put it off, I just rather would address it. So that's helped me to reach out to others, to ask the right questions, to be vocal about it. I'm not afraid of failure. And I haven't really considered that too much, but I don't know that I'm really afraid of failure. I think that if I fall, I'm surrounded by great people and I probably won't fall too far, right? But if I'm alone and I don't have these relationships if I fall, I can fall all the way, right? And so I don't think the people around me will let me fall that far. And so I don't have this fear that I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm going to do the wrong thing. I'm going to prep. I'm going to ask the right questions. I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to know the material. I'm going to the technologies. And we haven't even got into any technical things really in this conversation, right? We're just still talking about how do I self-improve to get where, how would someone get where I am today? This is my journey. This is how I did it. May not work for everyone. And you may be afraid to, I remember that when I first started doing webinars and turning the camera on and I thought, what will I say? What will I do? I did a webinar. I had an opportunity when I worked for Diligent or Galvanize. It's now Diligent, right? They're a large ERC company. I had an opportunity during COVID when it first happened. I got to do a webinar at one of the biggest Asaka conferences. I'd never done anything like that. I was scared to death. Yeah. We had to pre-record it and submit it. And then we had to join the call and listen to yourself talk and then take questions, right? And I thought, this is going to be the most incredibly horrible thing I've ever done in my life. And I made it through. I talked about the key risk indicators, right? What are KRAs and KPIs and all of that kind of stuff? And how do you manage risk? And I did a podcast on that. And the next thing you know, I did that and I had 100 LinkedIn requests and people sending me messages saying, hey, this was super valuable. Thanks for doing it. Want to connect and follow you. And I was like, wait a minute, what happened? And I went from having no followers to over 1,000 really fast. And it's sometimes you just have to take a chance and step out and do it.
Yeah, you do. Greg, your mindset though, like when you talk about not being scared of failure and stuff like that, because when we're talking, it's like, how, why wouldn't you do it? But there's a massive thing in people's mind where like me and you doing this now, it's public. Like anything where, you know, I know we're talking about risk and security, but anything where there's a risk of public failure is quite a thing, quite a preventative like barrier to people. And that's ultimately, it is fear of failure that stops people, because all this stuff makes sense in terms of career progression and like making you moving forward, having fun, being stimulated, tapping into your sense of purpose. So I think just people just try and get over that sense of failing in public, or that fear of failing in public, it will take them a long way. You've got some really good things that are clearly like etched in your mind, like you've almost got these little one-liners in your mind that you to keep going. I'd encourage the listeners to steal them off you, because they're quite good, like, oh, I won't fall too far, and yeah, not scared of failure, and bang, it's like just keep going. It's good, mate. I'm gonna pinch a few.
That's great. I've also, some of the people that I've mentored and I've told staff, I've had an opportunity and been blessed to manage a lot of people, and I've told them, don't let this career be the only thing about you. And when I look at a person that's an employee of mine, I don't see them as just that employee and that's all they do. And maybe this is something that I bring to relationships that I have with people. Like I would look at you, you're much, or people on my staff, right? People that I really know, they're much more than just a risk manager for me or a risk implementer for me. They're a friend, they're a father, they're a son to someone. And if the risk job that you're in today isn't working out, you're not going to, again, that's one of the things that I think about. I'm not going to fall too far. I'm a father. I'm a friend. I'm a husband. I have all of these, I'm a son, right? I have all of these other things in my life that are really who I am. This one thing isn't all that I am. And I had a fear when we got into COVID and people were being so isolated, right? That all of a sudden they didn't have those other support things and they were letting the current situation that we were all in, the largest, I call it the largest business continuity exercise that the world had ever been through. We were all part of that as COVID, right? It was a giant business continuity exercise, whether you were ready for it or not. But I was talking to my staff and saying, you don't let this be the only thing that defines who you are. Get up, walk around, go out, walk your dog, get up and do things. I'm not a micromanager. I don't want you to think that this is the only thing that defines who you are. Don't let, and I would say that to anybody, if someone asked me what's some advice I could give, don't let your career be the only thing that defines you. Go find something else to do. Go find a hobby. Let that be who you are. Be a good husband, be a good wife, be a good friend, be a good son or a mentor. Go find things like that to do, because then you're going to find value. And if one of them goes away, you're not going to lose your identity. You're still somebody, right? You have all of these things. Maybe that I'm a faith-based type of person. Maybe some of that drives why I feel that way and how I approach life like that. But I think those are valuable things that you could do as an individual. If you want to, again, set yourself up for success, realize that you're valuable. There's no one built to do what you're built to do. And the only thing preventing you from doing it is just some time, just some learning, just some questions, just some things you need to read, right? And just some experience and go be great, right? There's room for all of us to be great. So
yeah, no, Greg, I like it. Thanks, mate. What that does as well is that kind of identity thing and remembering son, husband, father. Just listening to you say that there, for me, I was like, oh yeah, that pressure off a bit actually. Because if it is all about doing the next thing or hitting this target or getting this certification or whatever it might be, it does intensify and pressurize the situation. And also, like, back to, you know, like faith and stuff like that. And if you are pushing anything too hard, I just think natural walls of resistance come up. You know what it's like. It's like you're pushing, but then you just start letting it flow and you're still working and you still, but it, you just let it flow and it just happens anyway. And it's nicer, it's easier. And yeah, I can see how that really like de-escalates and takes the pressure in your mind out of your career. I think it's good, mate. You know?
It is. I'll be really transparent with you for a moment. I probably owe a bunch of people an apology. When I was younger, I didn't have all these things. I wasn't as good to then as I am today at understanding how to manage the challenges of. I come from the generation where we worked hard, right? And you had long hours. If you wanted to learn these IT things, I can take you back. There's been multiple times I've worked 36 hours in a row, right? On complex problems that we had without stopping. I've done it more times than I should have done it. And I've asked teams to do that. I probably owe people an apology. And I've considered that. And I've looked back at my life and said, there's probably some people I've worked too hard that I've expected too much of. And I've had to learn to operate with a bit of grace. And to learn that there are more important things necessarily at times than some of the business tasks we're working on. There are more long-term goals. I had to learn to be a better person. I had to back down the way that I've approached people and managed people over the years. I think today I'm a different person than I was when I 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Definitely a different person than I was 10 years ago. But I grew up in the time and when you had to understand that sometimes you work 8 to 5 and sometimes you work 8 to done. And if you can get that concept, right, it's not every day, but sometimes you work 8 to 5, sometimes you work 8 to done. If I don't have to teach you what that means, man, you can be as successful as you want to be, right? Because people understand that that when there's work that needs to be done, you'll do it, right? You're going to stay and get your job done and no one's going to be waiting for you to get your portion done because you're going to do it. That's a challenging thing to learn these days. Not everyone feels that way. Not everyone operates like that. I grew up in that environment where that was the style. Sometimes it's 8 to 5, sometimes it's 8 to done.
Yeah, mate, I love that. I've heard it described as working in sprints as well. You know, you have times where you go. And when I, like hearing you say that now is personally really good for me. And hearing the sprints thing is really good because I used to grind and then I used to almost couldn't forgive me. I'd have that, oh yeah, I was just going to work a normal day today and maybe I might even just cruise through it as well. And I used to beat myself up about it. And then I was like, oh no, he works in sprints. And now you're saying that sometimes it's 8 to 5, sometimes it's 8 to 10. So basically you're working in sprints as well. So good to hear. It's why doing this, Greg, so good. Because you talked about grew up in a time and it's similar for me, like years ago, like we're talking really openly now, like it just wouldn't have happened years ago. I think we're getting better at it now. And we talk about faith. I talk about meditation on the podcast sometimes and stuff like that. And it's just, we're essentially like breaking down these social barriers and it's way better. It's way better for mental, physical health. It's really good to talk about it, mate, because it helped. I think it actually helps us too now. We're having like a little mini therapy session, Greg, aren't we? but it's good for people. It's good for people listening, mate. And I think especially in like this virtual world, it's good, mate. It's nice. And it's nice to hear you. Thanks for being so open as well. It's cool, mate.
No, I think there's, again, it's part of the journey. And you can embrace the journey or you can fight it the whole way, right? Don't fight it the whole way. Embrace it. Figure out if I need to tweak something, if I need to change something, then do that. I think that's just part of it, right? That you asked, how did we get here? Or how did I get where I'm at today? And that's been part of my journey to get there. Now, there's all kinds of technical things, right? There's all kinds of how do you manage risk and what does risk really look like? And what do I see the industry missing from a risk perspective? I don't think very many people I had an opportunity to work in the financial services space a lot. And I don't think most people understand what does real enterprise risk management look like. And we could deep dive things like that. And I have lots of thoughts around how do you manage risk better? How do you manage risk programs? How do you approach tearing your organization apart and putting it back together from a risk perspective? I think there's lots of things that we could talk about from a technical standpoint or a business standpoint. But I think, again, you have to get yourself right from a solid foundation so that then you can go do these types of things, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Those conversations didn't get me there, Right. What got me there were all of the things we've been talking about so far on this conversation, right? Which was the intricacies on how do you become a better person? How do you become a better listener and a better leader? And how do you allow yourself to be a mentor or be a mentee, right? You have to allow yourself to do those things, right? So you have to, it's not easy.
No, it's not, Greg. And again, even that, like you said, allowing yourself, there's people out there that are almost too proud to ask and stuff like that. And I go back to like you being in that office with the notepad and getting, you know, you're almost like hustling around the office, like getting information. Yeah. Can I ask you this? I'm going to ask you. And it's like, don't be afraid to annoy people the wrong thing, but just actually don't be afraid to ask and put yourself out there. And I think people will be surprised as well, like yourself, Greg, and other senior leaders that I know. It's actually surprising how much people you get to a certain point in your career and things have gone pretty well. And you actually just get to the stage where you do actually just want to help. Do you know what I mean? You want to give a bit.
And what I found also was that if someone who is a leader in a business takes the time to stop and talk to you and to give you valuable information, you're doing two things. If you're not taking notes, you're showing a lack of value of what they're saying to you. And then you might also forget some of the nuances of what they said it and how they said it, so that when you go to do what they ask you, you'll probably have to stop and ask them again, or you'll get done and they'll say, what about this piece? Did you not do that? Where's that piece we talked about? And then all of a sudden you've got egg on your face because you missed something because you just didn't document it. And so I think there's a certain amount of appreciation. If I came to you as a leader and you were telling me to do something, it should be expected that I'm going to take some notes, that I need to capture what you said. And I used to pride myself on being able to remember about every nuance of every conversation that I ever had. I could think about all those things. But what I learned was that the busier you get, the less likely you are to be able to do that well. And so you have to take notes. You have to, it helps you all the way around. I don't mean to beat that topic to death, but I think there's a lot of reasons to do it.
There is, mate. And what you're describing there is, like when we talk about communication, we're talking about verbal things. We touched upon written listening, massive element of communication and massive element of installing trust, building rapport. And it's like body language, social cues. It's everything you've mentioned there is basically every different layer within communication that gets you to where you are, that gets you into leadership positions, that sure. gets you moving forward and gets you. Yes, the technical stuff matters as well. That's that we all know that. But yeah, it's all the different aspects. So yeah, mate, it's good. So, mate, we've almost made it to the end without me sticking to any of the questions we planned, which I thought we would do.
So sorry.
No, mate, you haven't. It's been good, mate. And it's just really nice to get some insights into how and why you've acquired these skills in your journey and people picking up different things. And normally ask Greg about books or pods or anything you're consuming at the minute. I'm going to like turn it into a double question, which is basically books, podcasts that you found most helpful for your career, self-development, but also anything in particular in relation to your skills. It sounds like a lot of your learning has been done actually in a commercial environment in real life, but I don't know if there's any content in relation to articulating risk or anything like that in addition to books and podcasts, but anything out there, content, books, podcasts that you're listening to that could be helpful for the listeners, mate.
I listen to a lot of things. I listen to a lot of cybersecurity podcasts. I'm listening to a lot of AI stuff right now. I have an opportunity. I sit on an AI committee at our organization, our parent company organization, the larger ACA compliance group now. This is another self-starter type of thing. 2 years ago, year and a half ago, maybe 4 years ago, I'd seen this AI stuff coming. And so I just said, I need to know a lot about this. I need to go find it. I started following people like Ali Miller on LinkedIn, right? Who's the number one voice for AI, and started following other people and started listening to the AI breakdown and that's a podcast. I started listening to a bunch of that stuff on how do I learn how to do these things and what do I need to know about LLMs? People have been using machine learning and natural language processing and all these types of things for years. And all of these are part of now being lumped into that full on AI topics. I deep dive all of those things. And then any of those types of things, again, if you don't have certifications, spend your time doing some of those things. If you're not good at reading, go to Udemy, one of those online course places, and get some people like Thor Peterson who are doing great teaching on how to do these courses. And I'll give a shout out to a person I don't even know. Go on there, listen to these courses. You're going to hear great things. There are people out there teaching this stuff. Not all the courses are great, but there are some that are very good at teaching you these concepts where maybe you're a visual learner rather than just a reader. And it's hard to absorb it if you just read it. Some of the topics are complex and hard to digest. Go use these resources. They're on there. That Udemy does these sales all the time. You can get the courses for cheap. go do that, supplement your learning like that, right? Understand what the topics are in the news, in the technology, what are the new things, and then go find people talking about them. Go listen to it. Read articles, read news stories, subscribe to podcasts, and all of those different types of things. I think all of that will just continue to increase your value so that when someone raises their hand and says, what do we know about this particular type of topic? You can raise your hand and say, I've got some insight. I'm not the best, but I'm not afraid to tackle the conversation, right?
Even that you set yourself up to depressurize a situation, and it really helps. I love these little things you do when you start, Greg. It will really help people. And you mentioned there about someone's weak at reading. I think it's important to like be careful how people identify themselves. If they keep telling themselves they're weak at reading, they're probably right. They'll just be weak at reading. But if they tell themselves that, do you know what, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this course, we're going to do this Udemy thing and blah, 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 all of a sudden, given a bit of time, like you said earlier, you won't be. So yeah, mate, it's good. Yeah, cool, mate. As we come to the end, like I say, it's been good. And I always know it's been a good episode, mate, when I've not stuck to the script.
No, it's great. Yeah, there's probably much more we could talk about. And I've enjoyed this as well. This is the first one of these that I've done about myself. So this is really interesting to me. And how do we get there? I haven't really considered some of the things we're talking about until this conversation. Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's been my privilege to be here. I would say if people are interested in me or want to talk, reach out. And if I have time available, I'm generally pretty, I'll try to be responsive as I can. Right?
Yeah. I think LinkedIn the best.
Yeah, LinkedIn's the best way. Reach out to me on LinkedIn, right? Reach out, connect with me on LinkedIn. I post things around the organization. I work for a great organization. We're doing amazing things. If you're in the private equity space and you're looking for an organization who can help you, if you're in the small, mid-size, the largest organizations I work with today and I'm doing assessments on are 10 billion plus. Can do some pretty big things, but then also work with mid-size organizations all the time. If you need assistance, I work for a great organization. There are lots of them out there, but I work for one today. If you have questions about how do you get in the business, I have these conversations with people all the time. Reach out.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think LinkedIn is the best place to track you. I think I think you've got to be a bit persistent, I remember, but yeah, I hunted you down on the platform myself, Greg, so I know it can be done.
Yep, it can be done, yeah. And I apologized when I was like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not responding very, I'm not good at this sometimes. I get busy, but yeah, I'll do my best and always glad to connect. So.
No, cool, Greg. Mate, thank you. Really good, mate. So much in there for people, whether they want to progress up to leadership and director level and exec level, lots in there for them. But just for anyone that's genuinely interested in moving forward, which I know pretty much everyone is. So there's a lot in there for the listeners. And I really appreciate your time, buddy. It's nice to see you, and I'll see you soon.
Much appreciated. Thank you, everyone. Yep.